Grade 2 Conference, Lecture 35, Teaching the Saints, Part 7. I've gotten my information about Christopher from several sources, but the best single source, and it's in fact one of the very best single sources, if that's all the time you have for saint stories altogether, is The Giant at the Ford by Ursula Singh, S-Y-N-G-E. I don't know if it is in print. I do know that in the past, Rudolf Steiner College Bookstore would photocopy it for, you know, limited use only, and you can see if that's available. If you're in a more established Waldorf school, probably it's the kind of book that one teacher has passed down to another, and you may already have it. And in the fact, the title of the book, The Giant at the Ford, is about St. Christopher. So St. Christopher is born and to a poor mother and father, and he begins to grow very, very quickly. And here, you know, the children will delight if you can describe what that means when a little baby starts to grow and how much he needs to eat, and his head, you know, first bumps against the doorway and then finally is actually going through the ceiling, and he's just breaking out of the house. He's so large. So here, those children with stronger etheric forces, like the phlegmatics, might really enjoy that part of the story. And his parents tell him simply, "We can't care for you anymore, even though you're still a boy. You've got to find your own way in the world." So we have this fairy tale element there that's also very sweet. And, you know, if you're telling this story in the first weeks of grade 2, where the twilight of grade 1 still lives on, that's perfect. And then Christopher decides that he wants to serve the strongest, that this is what his life is going to be about. He's going to look for someone who is the strongest in the world whom he can serve. And first he's on a hill or a mountainside. He sees a great battle going on. And he watches carefully and sees finally one side prevails and the enemy flees or is captured. And he finds his way to the king of the victorious side and says, "Are you the strongest?" And the king says, "I certainly am. You saw me vanquish the others in this battle." And Christopher says, "I want to serve you." And so he serves the king. And by now he's even bigger, and he's quite a giant and very strong, and he's able to lead the king's men into battle. He's able to help the king build new palaces and dredge ports and whatever, you know, one would want to present to the children as tasks that a giant could accomplish. And here, of course, the cholerics are getting very interested, these impossible tasks, challenges that to which the great giant is able to rise. And he also is favored by the king, closest to him. And so one night at a great feast, a minstrel comes, and the minstrel tells tales of ancient times to which everyone listens. And Christopher notices that whenever the minstrel says a certain word, a certain name, the king turns pale and begins to tremble. And so Christopher speaks to the king afterwards and says, "I notice that whenever the minstrel said the word devil, the devil, you turned pale and trembled. Are you afraid of him?" And the king admits, "Yes, I am." And Christopher says, "Then you are not the strongest." And the king, you know, tries to shrug this off, but Christopher will not be satisfied and says, then I must find him. He is the one I must serve. Where do I find him? And the king says words to the effect of, he's not very hard to find. He's all over. You'll see him. And certainly then Christopher finds the devil and he serves him. And now he's doing very terrible things, which the melancholics will be very interested in hearing about. He brings illness into the world. He, you know, wrenches souls away and brings them down to the devil's home where they must suffer for a long, long time. And in a way helps the devil bring terrible evil and suffering into the world. And here, in a way, you're not going to say, and Christopher felt badly about doing this, but he was serving. Christopher doesn't feel one way or another about this, and this is important. You present it in just as neutral a way as you did Christopher leading the king's men into battle or building beautiful palaces. Christopher wants to serve the strongest, and he will do whatever the strongest says he must do. And so he is with the devil for many years. But then, one day, he and the devil are walking through some fields that farmers have plowed. And it was common in those times. And here, in a way, you see a medieval quality coming into the story, even though it was meant to take place much earlier than that. But at the edges of their fields, the farmers would often put up a little shrine. And here you'd have to explain what that meant. And there would be then very often an image of Jesus on the cross in that shrine. Because during prayer time, they couldn't make their way all the way across their many, many acres of fields to get to the church. So they would have a little church for themselves. So Christopher notices that whenever they're walking across a field, though the devil strides proudly and, invulnerably across those fields, whenever they approach one of those shrines, the devil moves around it. He takes a long, circuitous sort of path around that shrine before they walk back on the road, which runs along the fields again. And at the end of this walk, Christopher said to the devil, why did you do that? Why didn't we just walk straight? And the devil, of course, not one to give a straight answer, tries to give all kinds of excuses. But finally, under Christopher's, endless questioning, he has to acknowledge that he is afraid of the one who died on the cross. And Christopher says, you're afraid of him? Does that mean he's stronger than you are? And here again, the devil hems and haws and sort of says, well, he's not stronger than I am on the earth, but in the bigger picture, yes, he is stronger than I am. And Christopher says, why didn't you tell me? You said you were the strongest. I must go and serve him immediately. Where will I find him? And the devil just laughs at this naive question and says, you can't find him. He's not to be found anywhere. People think they found him, but he's long gone. Well, Christopher just doesn't give up so easily. He is, after all, choleric, and here's a big challenge. And he goes off then on a long, long search for the one who died on the cross and can't find him. And then finally he makes his way. He's led by people to a hermit who people say does know where to find the one on the cross. But by the time Christopher appears, the hermit is dying. He lives in a little hut, which is near a river. And he explains to Christopher that his way of serving God, his way of serving the one who died on the cross, is to take travelers by a little ferry across the river. And he said, you know, whenever somebody comes and asks me to take them, I stop whatever I'm doing and off I go and help that person. And that's how I serve. And now you have come, I've been expecting you, and you will serve in the same way. And the people in this area will give you your food. Don't worry, they will bring food to you, but they know you are a hermit and they will not bother you. So you may have to explain hermit. You can see, you know, that you have to look at these stories. There's often a lot of sort of cultural backstory here. And you may have to explain various things to the children before you tell the whole story, or at least before you tell a certain part of it. So Christopher does this. Year after year, he ferries people across the river. And he wonders, how is this drawing me closer? Am I really serving the one who died on the cross? But so it must be. I came here, and the hermit said he was expecting me, and I must carry on his work no matter what. And then one night, a dark and stormy night, there's a knock on the door, and Christopher encounters a little baby who nonetheless is able to speak to him and says, I want to cross the river. And Christopher says, come in, spend the night here, and when the storm is over in the morning, I will take you. And the baby says, I must go now, right now, at this moment. And Christopher has pledged he must take whoever wishes to go when they wish to go. He realizes the ferry will be dashed on the rocks by the waves. It will be of no use. But as a giant, he knows that he is tall enough to cross that river. So he puts the little baby on his back, who's light as a feather, and he begins to walk through the river. But it is wild. The storm winds are whipping up the waves, and the rainfall has made the river swell over its banks. And Christopher realizes it is much, much deeper. And not only is it growing deeper and deeper with every step he takes towards the center of that river, but also this little lightweight baby on his back is becoming heavier and heavier, and Christopher can barely stand upright. And he has no idea how he made it across the river. But when he awakens in the morning, there it is bright and sunny. The little baby is fast asleep next to him, and birds are flying around him, and he seems to be as bright as the sun that's beginning to rise in the sky. And the little baby opens his eyes, and Christopher says, I don't know how we made it across the river, for it was very, very deep. And you little one, you were so heavy. I felt like I was carrying the whole world on my shoulders. And the baby smiles at Christopher and says, you were carrying the world, for I am the Christ child. I carry the world on my shoulders, and for one night, you helped me carry it. And one more thing that, of course, I would have told the children at the beginning of the story but neglected to tell you was that this giant's name was Opheros, helper, or one who offers. Good name for a choleric. And the Christ child says to him, from this day forth, your name will be Christopheros, one who helps Christ, because you help me carry the burdens of the world. And with that, the baby disappeared. And Christopher was not to see him again. But he realized he had found the one he wished to serve, and he would joyfully serve him as long as he lived. And indeed, second graders, Christopher was to serve him even longer than he lived, because there are many people in the world who, whenever they're going to go on a journey, will have a little image of Christopher, which might be a little statue, or it might be a little brooch or something that they wear at the end of a necklace that shows Christopher carrying the child on his back through the storm. And they know that Christopher will continue to protect them as well as they travel. Sometimes you will even see this in people's cars. Whenever they get in their car, they look at that statue of Christopher and they feel he's present. He will keep me safe. So that is the story of Saint Christopher. I should mention that such a statue actually plays a role, kind of tragic role, in the Oscar-winning movie Crash, the early 21st century movie, I believe. Very interesting how it comes out there. And also, I should mention that though Christopher has essentially been removed from the role of the saints, that hasn't stopped people from keeping those statues in their cars. I still see them here and there, especially in cities. So there you have the story of the choleric. And I say this is the archetypal story, because Christopher's goal in life is not power. It's not lording it over others. It's not the accumulation of great wealth. It is service. It is wanting to find someone stronger to serve. And this is, if you play your cards right, and if you work well with the cholerics in your class, you will find that they will wish to serve you, that they will be there for you, your biggest supporters, not in second grade, not in fourth grade. It'll be in the uppermost grades, in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, as that temperament starts to be transformed. You know, what's left of the choleric temperament then becomes an instrument of service. And I think the Christopher story embodies this beautifully. But you could also see, of course, other elements in there, that this is a longer story and it has its melancholic side, it has its phlegmatic side. You can, in a way, embroider certain things and bring a more sanguine side to it, though that isn't such a strong part of the story. And this trial by water is, of course, something of great interest always to the phlegmatic children as well. So we will go on now looking at other ways of approaching the stories of the saints.